Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest tonight grew up in Elgin, Michigan. He has founded 9 different banks, the latest being Republic Bank, which earlier this year was named by Fortune magazine the 3rd best company in America to work for and the number 1 company to work for among small companies. He and his wife, Lisa, are the largest horse owners in Michigan with 160 thoroughbreds. His name, Jerry Campbell, and we're honored to have him as our guest. I'm Jack Frasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Now, back to Anything Is Possible with Jack Frasula on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're with Jerry Campbell, the founder and chairman of Republic Bank. Jerry, welcome.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
It's great to have you. Can you start by telling us about your parents and your childhood?
Well, I grew up in a small town in western Michigan. It's called Allegan, about 12 miles off the coast. We grew up in a rural area, initially lived on my grandfather's farm, which was a kind of an everything farm. We had cows, pigs, crops, etc. And I always thought then I'd like to have an inside job with no heavy lifting and get off the farm, but I ended up back on the farm, as you announced earlier. I was the oldest of 5 children. My father was a school teacher, and he also worked at the post office. And my mother was the caretaker for all of us, and we had a great childhood.
You graduated from Central Michigan?
Yes, I did.
What were your first couple of jobs?
At my very first job, I went to work for Michcon Gas Company down at 1 Woodward Avenue in Detroit. I drove over here in a 46 Ford Coupe and went to work. And I had a bumper sticker, don't laugh, it's paid for. But had a good job at Michcon. I worked in the treasurer's department, had some excellent people. They sent me to school at night, and I got an MBA from Wayne State at night. In those 2 years, I was working at the gas company. And it was a very good experience for me.
You've started 9 different banks. How did you ever get into the banking business?
Well, I sort of backed into it. I didn't plan to go into banking when I got out of school. When the gas company sent me up to Wayne, I took all the finance and banking courses at night up there, and I was working in the financial area at the gas company, including dealing with the banks the gas company dealt with in terms of lines of credit, and leasing vehicles, and all that sort of thing. And Wayne, after I graduated, invited me to teach in their program. And I went to work for Wayne State University in the business school full-time. And believe it or not, I was teaching the banking classes. I had no experience. I was definitely a chapter ahead of most of the students. But that went on for a while. And the head of one of the banks downtown, which became a part of Comerica, it was HR department, was taking a class, getting an MBA. I was teaching him about banking. He probably could have taught me about banking, but he invited me to come down, and for the next 5 years, I taught full-time at Wayne and worked full-time downtown in the bank. It was a long day, but I enjoyed it.
9 different banks that you founded, and they've all been very successful. If you were to give a 2 or 3 minute course on the banking business, what would you say?
Well, the banking business isn't really much different than most businesses. It's a service business, and it's all about people and relationships. And if you surround yourself with good people, good things will happen. If you don't, it won't. And it's a very simple business, really. If you take care of people, they take care of you, and you build on it from there. Been very lucky to be associated with some great people over the years and enjoyed the business a lot.
As long as I've known you over these long number of years, everything you do is first class. everything you do is classy. How did you get that way, and why do you do that?
Well, I thank you for the compliment. I'm not sure how I got that way. My mother's name was Grace, and when I was acting up as a youngster, she would give me the Grace lecture, and the essence of it was I needed more grace. And so if I had a route to that, and I hope that that's the case, I would go back to my mother.
Another thing that I've learned about you and admired about you is time after time, you go last. Whereas a lot of business owners, leaders, they want their piece of the pie first. If something doesn't go right, they take their piece. Others suffer. You never do that. Why?
Well, I don't think about that in a sense of being an obvious act on my part. I believe it's just a matter of manners and courtesy. Back to my mother again, it's a graceful thing to do, and it always feels good to be courteous to others. And things go around and it comes back. I don't think of it consciously, but if that is the case, that's probably why.
When people write books about servant leadership, what is servant leadership?
I don't know, Jack. It's not a phrase that I use. I'm not even sure it's a phrase to describe me. But we've always felt that if our employees were happy, our customers would be happy. If that's servant leadership in some form or another, I guess I would buy into that. We think a great place to work at Republic manifests itself in the form of good service to our customers and therefore happy customers.
We're talking to Jerry Campbell, who's founded 9 Banks. I'm Jack Krasula. This is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything is Possible with Jack Krasula on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back. We're with Jerry Campbell. Jerry, another thing about you is you're always humble. Where did you get that and why?
Well, once again, Jack, I'm not sure I'm always humble. I take that as a compliment. If I were to trace it back, it'd probably be my mother again, who was a very humble person and who taught that in our family. But I've seen so many cases of people who were the opposite of humble. And when they were flying high, maybe that was all right. But when they tripped, I noticed no one was there to catch them. They let them fall. And so, I think it's a good trait. I enjoy it in others. I hope that you see that in me, and I hope others do too. But I think it's a great trait.
More and more in America today, people are going out on their own, trying to be an entrepreneur, starting their own companies. What advice would you give to those people?
Well, it's a great opportunity. You sort of start with only in America is this kind of opportunity. And we've all enjoyed it, and we love it, and we love to see it in others. The difference that I see out there is there are many people who want to be entrepreneurs, they want to be on their own, but they're unwilling to pay the price. I've seen lots of people work extremely hard. I've seen people, for instance, get one McDonald's franchise and then get two and then get three and then get four. And they work the front end of the store and the back end of the store, and they take the garbage out, and they hire the people, and they serve the customers, and they follow all the rules. And then at the end of the line, they sell all the restaurants, and they make $1 million or some large amount. And other people look at them and say, gee, they weren't that smart. But they worked very hard. They were dedicated. They had a good system, surrounded themselves with good people. And it's really the American way. It's a great opportunity in this country.
Can you be ethical? Can you be fair with people and at the same time build a successful business?
I think you have to be absolutely fair and ethical. The key word in your staff is trust. If your staff doesn't trust you and you don't trust them, it's hard to build a company. And they can't trust anyone that is unethical. And if you're unethical, your staff around you would certainly know it. They'd observe your patterns of behavior. And I think it's absolutely essential to building a company. You have to build trust first.
Has America seen its greatest days?
I hope not. I think there's great opportunities. I've had an opportunity to serve on the board of one of our state universities, Central Michigan University, for the last 10 years. And I see the students there regularly, and I'm more impressed with them today than I ever have been. I think the future is very bright for our country, and we've got a lot of great people coming along. We have a family foundation, and we give out a number of scholarships each year. And in that foundation, I have an opportunity to interview high school students that are college bound. And I think they look great. I think the future's bright.
Everybody needs self-esteem. If a person doesn't have self-esteem, how do they get it?
Well, you got to get it step by step. I call it building blocks. We've worked with a lot of people who are trying to make a comeback from a physical ailment or a mental ailment or a family tragedy or a business tragedy. They got to build a foundation. They got to put one block down at a time. They got to build it up from there. And if you don't put down a strong foundation, you're not going to have a strong building. And I think people can make a comeback. It's fun to see it. I encourage it. And from time to time, I participate.
Through the years, there's been times when you see no light at the end of the tunnel.
Never been a time when I didn't see light at the end of the tunnel, Jack.
Where do you keep getting the hope when things are tough?
Well, actually, I've been very fortunate that things haven't been tough for me. I've had a blessed life, in my opinion. But I get the hope of getting up every day and making a slight improvement in the world we live in. If you were going to put something on my tombstone today, and I'm not ready today to have you put it on my tombstone, I'd have something like, he made things better than he found them. And I think that's the hope and the building and the growth opportunities that we all have in front of us.
Let's talk a little bit about Republic Bancorp. You started in April of 86. Today it's $5.7 billion in assets. It's the third largest bank holding company headquartered in Michigan. The 81st largest publicly traded bank in the country. You've declared a 10% dividend for 19 years in a row. Earlier this year, Fortune named you the third best company in America to work for. Just the other week, you were named as one of the top 100 companies for working mothers to be with. Tremendous success. What's been the key?
Well, the key is clearly people. When we started Republic, there wasn't necessarily a need for another bank in Michigan, but we had a vision as to a service that we thought we could provide. And I gathered around me some people that I knew and trusted. One key guy was a guy named Barry Eckold, who had worked with me for the 14 years prior to these 19, so let's call it 33. And he's our chief credit officer and president of the bank, a great guy. And we added a few months later a guy named Dana Klucke, and he's grown to be the president and CEO of the holding company. And so we've had a lot of longevity with a lot of people, just to mention those two as great examples. But back to something I said earlier, surround yourself with good people, develop a trusting relationship, and all of the standard caveats like no surprises, and it works. We've been very fortunate at Republic, and the key to this great place to work is the people themselves.
A lot of entrepreneurs start a business, they're doing everything, and they reach a certain level and the company never gets any bigger. And one of the key reasons is they don't get quality enough people and they can't delegate. How did you learn to delegate?
You're very right with that comment. A long time ago, a smart guy I worked for sat down on a piece of yellow dog, and he said, there's two ways to run a business. And he drew a Christmas tree and the hub of a wheel with spokes. And he said, entrepreneurs and people who start a business, a proprietorship and so forth, are always the hub of the wheel. Every spoke goes out and comes back to them. They have to make every decision. As the wheel goes faster and faster and you grow, they're unable to keep up or go to the next step. And many of those entrepreneurs are unwilling or unable to surround themselves with people that are really better than they are. And that hurts them. The Christmas tree, on the other hand, is a delegation of accountability and responsibility down, sort of limb by limb or department by department. And I took that lesson to heart, and I've deployed it, and it worked.
We're talking to Jerry Campbell. 11 former employees are now CEOs of other banks. I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
This is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR with Jack Krasula.
We're talking to Jerry Campbell, the founder and chairman of Republic Bank. Jerry, 60 employees at Republic are now millionaires. Earlier this year, when you found out that Fortune named your organization the third best company in America to work for, what was your first thought?
Well, we were very flattered, but my first thought is that we were overrated. We have made great strides with our company. We've gone to best practices and higher ground, and there was no way I thought we were the third best company to work for in America, because I thought we had lots of things we needed to improve. But notwithstanding that, we took it as a great compliment and as an honor. And it gives us little latitude to go on up to be number two or number one, and that's where we'd like to be. We have been gravitating in the last 5 years from about the 30th best down to the third best, and it's an interesting dilemma to get here. It's sort of like some of the history with the Pistons and the Red Wings and this repeat kind of phenomenon. And it takes a harder effort because you kind of lack the hunger and the desire to get there. But we'd like to be number one. We're working hard at it. We think our company and our customers and our shareholders will be better for us trying. But we're going to be happy just to be on the top 100 list next year.
Ross Perot put it this way once. It's a strange thing about Americans. Very often, when they get successful, they quit doing the very thing that made them successful.
I think that's absolutely true. I don't think it's true at Republic because we're striving hard to get there, but it's hard to go back at it. There were a couple of interesting stories on other Michigan companies that achieved notoriety and recognition under this 100 Best to Work For. And I went and talked to the CEOs of those companies, and they all told me the very same thing. Many of those companies have since fallen off the list. But we're out there, we're going to keep charging, and we'd like to be number one.
We're talking to Jerry Campbell, and I'm Jack Krasula. And this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Once again, here's your host, Jack Krasula.
Welcome back. We're with Jerry Campbell, who's founded 9 different banks. Jerry, every company, every organization, every university, every band has a culture. What is a culture?
Well, there's probably a dictionary definition, but my definition is it's how you go about your business and how you deliver your goods and services to your customers. And we've developed a culture over the years, many of the items based on experiences that I had had in the banking business along the way. And by the time we started Republic 19 years ago, almost 20 years ago now, we had kind of our own baggage of culture in mind. And when we started Republic, we put all of those approaches to a banking culture into one package, and we called it Republic, and it's worked. I might give you an example of that. Back in the 70s in Lansing, Michigan, I was the chairman of the board of a bank there, and it was called Paysetter Bank. And at Paysetter, we just opened a new office downtown right across from the Capitol, the old Jack Tower Hotel building. Took the whole main floor, conventional bank, teller windows, bank president, loan officers, tellers, receptionists, etc. And the president of the bank had a administrative assistant who was exceedingly good, and she gave me a lot of culture ideas in watching her operate. We had a teller line with a standard rope next teller approach. People would line up in these roped runways, and it's sort of a little bit like a cattle processing approach. And for the customers in that line that she knew or recognized, she would motion them over to her desk, which they would gladly come and drop out of the line. She would take their transaction, go around the corner behind the teller's line, give it to a teller. The teller would process it. She would run back to her desk, hand it to the customer, and have them on their way. And pretty soon, as you might imagine, the customers that knew her started skipping the line and going directly to her. And observing that, we brought in another desk and put it next to her, brought in another young lady who was very service-oriented, a former teller, and parked her at that desk, and we called her a personal banker. And pretty soon, most of the customers were going to the administrative assistant to the president or the personal banker instead of getting in the line. So we did away with 6 out of 7 of the teller lines in that office. Just had one for people who wanted to get in and get out, or say they had a bunch of cash to process in the form of coin and so forth. And pretty soon we had 4 personal banker desks plus the administrative assistant and 1 teller. And I said to myself then, this is the way to do it. So at Republic, all the new offices we've opened over the years have all been with personal bankers. Every customer is assigned a personal banker, and they handle that account a lot like an insurance agent or a stockbroker would. It's their customer, it's their book of business, and it's been one of the keys to our success.
Time after time, a company, a sports team, will bring on, hire a great producer whose culture doesn't align with our culture. Long term, it never works. But it's a catch-22. We need this great producer. What would you say to those people?
I'd say your observation is correct. If the approach of the great producer and the culture of the company can't reconcile, it won't work. They'll be antagonizing each other, and it'll be frustrating and so forth. So when we select people, and we love to hire great producers, we ride on them to our higher road of success. We make sure they understand how we do business, and if they can fit in and get on that team, I think that it really works. You know, I love going to the Piston games. I went to many of the playoff games last year. And I look at the talent on the Pistons, and individually, it's not a bunch of all-stars that have come together in a team. It's a bunch of blue-collar workers, as we call them here in Detroit, who've come together as a team. They've been well-coached, they've been well-managed, and they play together, and they're hard to beat. I'd like to think that a lot of things we do at Republic have an analogy to what the Pistons have done. I admire what they've done, and I hope we can duplicate it.
Recently, you wrote your philosophy of life. It's a 6 points, principles to live and manage by. Number 1, firm but fair.
Well, ultimately, it's a lot like raising children and or training your dog or working with good employees. They expect good rules, good discipline, and they expect it to be carried out even-handedly. And they can live within those rules as they understand them if you administer them fairly. So I have for a long time believed in firm but fair, and you play no favorites, it works well, and you stick to the rules. Looking back, it's been a key to our success.
Number two, follow your passions.
Well, I think life's too short to do things you don't really enjoy. I've enjoyed banking. It's been very good to me. I appreciate the opportunity of working with our staff and our shareholders and our directors, and it's been a passion, and we've really enjoyed it. And it's one of the reasons we're probably successful at it. You mentioned horses. My favorite hobby, and it's grown into a business now, is breeding and racing thoroughbred racehorses. My wife, Lisa, runs our farm. I get up in the morning and I look out any window and I see horses and paddocks, and it's beautiful scenery. And we love to breed a mare, raise a baby, train it, break it, take it to the track, and win a big stakes race. Very gratifying. It's a passionate experience for us. Just last night, Lisa and I won a big stakes race over at Great Lakes Downs in Muskegon, and I think she was still smiling when I left for work this morning.
Point number three, keep it simple.
Well, I've always tried to keep it simple. I mean, there's the old expressions they use. KISS is the another way of saying it. Keep it simple, stupid, is that if you don't understand your business and you can't lay it out in a very simple format for your employees and staffers to understand, it becomes too complicated. So we do a lot of transactions, we do a lot of volume, but our transactions are all simple and they're easily understandable, and we try not to do anything we don't understand.
Number four, people.
Well, people probably should have been number one. It's number one in my mind, and I've enjoyed being associated with the people in the banking business. As you noted earlier, we've had a number of people leave our company for great opportunities, and I enjoy their continued success. We've got a great number of people who have stayed with us for a long period of time. I've seen their kids grow up, and I've seen what they've done for the company. So you show me a loyal, trustworthy, hardworking person. They don't need to be a genius, and I'll show you a successful company.
Number five, risk.
Well, there's an old theory, risk takers must be compensated, although there's a footnote to that, that's on average. So some are and some aren't. So the calculation of risk in any business is very important. Republic tries to keep its risk management under control, and the day and age we live in, it's very, very important. But we take risk. They are monitored and controlled risk. They're limited in nature, and we live by that philosophy.
The last one, integrity.
Well, integrity probably should have been up there either as one or two, maybe a 1A. Without integrity, you don't have anything, whether it's in your personal relationship, whether it's in your job, whether it's dealing with your customers. People can stand a no answer, delivered properly, they can stand a yes answer, but a lack of integrity kills every relationship.
We're talking to Jerry Campbell. A mutual friend once said that Jerry's so honest, you could shoot craps with him over the telephone. That's honest. I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
This is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR with Jack Krasula.
We're talking to Jerry Campbell, who at age 14 quit selling newspapers and took a job at JCPenney's.
Yes, I did, Jack. It was a great opportunity for me. back in the 50s, J.C. Penney was on the main street of every small town in America, and they had a great culture and philosophy. At that time, they paid the manager 25% of the profits of the store, which they since had to change when they went into the big malls and so forth. And James Cash Penney, spelled P-E-N-N-E-Y, had a great vision. He wrote two interesting books that he gave to all of his employees and all of his managers. And one was called A Thousand Partners, which was the 1,000 managers of these 1,000 stores across America. And the other was Main Street USA, where he developed his philosophy and is a chapter in that book about, for instance, when do you close the store? At approximately closing time, you walk out on the main street and you look to the left and you look to the right, and if no one is coming down the street, you close the store. And he had a lot of philosophies of that kind. But this manager of the store back in Allegan, Michigan in the 50s was a guy named George B. Nana, N-A-N-N-A. He was a great guy. He's the first guy that I ran into with a lot of philosophy and culture in his veins of how to run a business. And I was working in the storeroom, moving merchandise around during the week. And on Friday nights and Saturdays, I worked on the sales floor. And a manager named Nana often had me up at his desk. I guess now I would call it mentoring. Back then, I would call it preaching. But he had on his desk, and he was a good Rotarian, he had the Rotary Club four-way test. And I have carried it around ever since. And the four-way test of Rotary, for those of you who don't know it, is of the things we think, say, or do, it has four tests. Is it truth? Is it fair to all concerned? Will it build goodwill and better friendships? And will it be beneficial to all concerned? So if you apply that four-way test to your business decisions and your personal decisions, it really works. And for that, I thank the Rotary Club and the manager named Nana back in the Penny Store in the 50s. It was a great basis for me to think about the four-way test as I faced issues and decisions along the way.
You're a bachelor. You own a couple of thoroughbreds. You meet a lady named Lisa, and your life changes. Can you talk about that?
That's right. I guess I would start with bingo. I'd been in the horse business as an owner in a smaller way for about 25 years. My grandfather, who was a country doctor in Michigan, graduated from U of M Medical School in 1899. He had racehorses, standardbreds with a sulky. He raced them himself. My father was a state judge and ran several county fairs as a racing secretary. And I had a keen interest in horses for a long time. Then I met this gal named Lisa, and we got married, and she ramrods a horse operation, and she does a great job. And it's fun to be in something that your wife is your partner, your friend, your lover, and your confidant, and we've enjoyed a lot of success, and we get a lot of gratification from the horses. It's fun to see them come off the farm with what we call homebreds, and go out and win important races. It's a very gratifying experience.
A year ago, there was a vote of whether we should have racinos. A lot of people believe that horse racing is bad, awful. What do you say to them?
Well, there's a lot of questions in that question, Jack. First, there was a vote, and the reason it was an issue is that it was challenging the turf of the casinos in Detroit and the Indian casinos in Michigan, where there's been a great expansion. But you need to remember that we've been having horse racing wagering in Michigan for 80 years. It's been regulated, it's been taxed, it's been successful, and unfortunately it's in decline due to all of the other market factors, particularly the Indy casinos and the big casinos downtown, which is an alternative. the referendum that was passed basically said that if there's an expansion of gaming, including the racinos at the tracks, that the people need to vote on it first. It sounds good on the surface, sounds like the American way, but it was really pushed by people who were already in the business and didn't want more competition. The reason that it's good in the industry, if you go to other states where they have additional gaming at the tracks, which includes Iowa, Louisiana, Pennsylvania, West Virginia, and others, is there's been a great increase of the activity at the tracks, which has increased the purse pools the way they're determined, which is what the horsemen live on, is the money they run for at the track, and it's been very important to the industry. Historically, before there was any other gaming opportunities in Michigan, you could go out to Ladbroke DRC, or you go to Hazel Park, or you go to Northville, and you could wager on the horses and have dinner and have a good time, and all was well. And I've got some pictures back in my portfolio where at DRC, for instance, it was totally crowded with people, and people were dressed, and the place is packed, and it was a great place to go. That's fallen off. I'd love to see it come back. There's a proposed new track in Romulus, which is in the metropolitan area. I think it would be great for the industry. And with or without racinos, I think there is a place for horse racing. It just would be better if they had additional revenue from the so-called racinos.
You and Lisa own 160 thoroughbreds, 30 employees. You race them in Michigan, New York, Kentucky, Florida. When you win the Derby, what will you do?
Well, first I'll just reach over to you and say, glad you're here with me, Jack. It's our dream to win the Derby. It's like everything else. You live on dreams. Dreams are good for you. We really think we're going to win it someday. But there's 40,000 new babies born every year in the United States, and only one of those is going to win the Derby because it's run for three-year-olds only. And they start about 16 to 18 horses in the race. So we probably got a better shot of making the MBA, which I know I can't make. But we're dreaming that we'd love to do that. We've had some great horses. And I'll see you in the winner's circle.
What are you the proudest of, Jerry?
Well, I think I'm probably proudest of my marriage to Lisa. I'm very proud of the results at Republic that we've been able to achieve over almost 20 years. And we've had great rewards in the horse racing business. But I guess I'm proudest of my marriage and my friendships.
You're mid-60s?
Yep.
Great shape. How long? You work out every day.
Yeah.
How long are you going to keep doing this?
Well, I'm never going to retire. I'm going to keep doing it as long as I can. I don't see anything stopping me in the foreseeable future, knock on wood, literally knock on wood. But I think you, if you have a passion for life and you enjoy what you're doing and you're challenged and you get up every day and get into the game, it's fun. That's what we do. That's what we're about, and we're having fun.
If you're up in front of Central Michigan students giving a speech, what advice would you give them?
Well, I've actually done exactly that. And I've always tried to give a speech that I thought that somebody might be willing to hear. When I was at Central, I worked in the food commons, and I was a busboy. And I had the great fortune a few years back to be named the chairman of the board of trustees at Central. And the headlines in the student paper called the CMU Life was From Busboy to Chairman. So I tell that little story. I made 85 cents an hour as a busboy back in the 50s up at Central. And I worked hard and I kept focused on what I wanted to be. And I try to tell that story to the students without lecturing.
Jerry, thanks for doing this. Thanks for the friendship. Thanks for the mentoring. It's an honor to have you. Our guest next Sunday will be Wayusi Olosola, the president of Pioneers for Peace. Until then, I'm Jack Krasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because anything is possible. Spawn.